Thank you very much for that kind introduction. I was very pleased to be asked by the organizers to participate in the symposium, although I have to admit I was a little bit at a loss as to what exactly I should cover in this. And so really, as I began to think about the global challenges facing the world and my recognition that soils is really fundamentally at the basis of this, I kind of used this theme to actually put together the talk, and also thinking about how it's critical that soil science communities internationally work together to solve some of these major problems, not only scientifically and through education and outreach and engagement, but also through political engagement, which is something that at the Soil Science Society of America we're quite involved with. So I'm starting out with this particular slide here. Oftentimes, when I use this slide, I'm accused of being soil-centric, because basically it demonstrates that the pedosphere is really at the center of the hydrosphere, atmosphere, biosphere, and lithosphere. And while there are certainly feedbacks and various interactions between these, it is really that remarkable that soil is really at the center of all of these interactions. And so therefore, soil forms the base of the ecosystem services pyramid. And oftentimes, you know, aquatic people will say, well, but soil has nothing to do with aquatic systems. I can't imagine anyone thinking that that's true at all, given what we see in terms of water quality and quantity issues, again, that are related to the actual management or mismanagement of the soil resource. The pressures on the soil resource, as we know, are at a historic high, and it's really difficult to see what the carrying capacity of our soil resource is now and what it will be into the future. So we're really at a time in history, I think, where we are experiencing unprecedented challenges in terms of this resource. As we know, population growth will be growing rapidly towards 9 billion people by 2050 or so. And at the same time, we have global climate change. And while these obviously are all interacting, in terms of the soil resource, there's a lot of pressure from the population and what I'll talk about in terms of land use, and then also as soil is a very important reservoir as well as a source for atmospheric gases, as we know, it interacts directly with climate change, but then is also interacted upon by climate change in ways that we are having a difficult time understanding, since these are very complex, coupled, nonlinear processes. So the question that we are really asking right now is, can the global soil resource be sustained while providing sufficient ecosystem services for 9 billion plus people on a warming planet? And basically, as I think of the soil resource, I really think of land use applications and, you know, kind of put it into three categories. So we have a limited pool of soil, and in fact, some would say a shrinking pool of soil for a lot of reasons that I'll talk about. But basically, we have agroecosystems that provide our food, feed, and fiber, and now increasingly pressure for fuel. We have our built environments in terms of urbanization, as well as our natural and managed forest ecosystems. And so there's an interaction between these, obviously, as we build our environments, our urbanization expands, then we put pressure on the other two, and so forth. 50% of the Earth's ice-free land surface has been transformed by man, and 35% of all anthropogenic greenhouse gases in the atmosphere since 1850 are a result of these land use changes. That's a number that oftentimes people are unaware of. They think of fossil fuels as being the major contributor, which of course they are, but 35% is quite significant, and this is due to land use changes globally. And the increased urbanization, obviously, then, is a pressure on that land, on the land use for the other two categories, that is, agroecosystems, as well as natural and managed ecosystems. And there's a few interesting things. One thing, as I think most of us know now, that sometime in 2007, We're not sure exactly when, perhaps halfway through the 2007. For the first time since in mankind's history, we have more people living in urban environments than rural environments, and that will continue to grow. And you can see some of the distribution between various parts of the world. But the important thing here, of course, is that biodiversity on the planet is being compromised, and 25% of the world's protected areas, these natural ecosystems, are within 20 kilometers of a major urban center. And also, I'll be talking a little bit about this later on a global scale, but even in China alone, in this 10-year period, about 8 million hectares of soil, arable soil, was actually lost. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but this is from a paper in Science that was really talking about ecosystem services, and where you have natural ecosystems that provide all these different ecosystem services, except not, obviously not much in terms of food, feed or fiber, intensive cropping systems that provide much fewer ecosystem services besides food, feed, and fiber, and then managed agro-ecosystems that are alternative managed systems that can still provide other ecosystem services as well as the food. And this is just a conceptual diagram. Oops, I'm sorry. Oops. But again, we go back to this idea of the land use and the soil resource, and there are really these three major things in terms of the competition for this land resource. The water quantity and quality, as I'll talk about, is of course directly linked to the quality and quantity of the soil resource. Again, the ability to produce food, feed, and fiber, and now fuel production, and then waste management. So again, we have competing activities on this land source. So in terms of global food production demands, I think probably many of you have heard this this week. Professor Ajita mentioned it, but more food will need to be produced worldwide over the next 50 years than has been produced in the past 10,000 years combined. That's a remarkable figure in my mind, and it's a remarkable challenge that we'll be called to. And we hear a lot about how we're going to try to do that through intensification and through plant breeding and genomics. But you know, as I look at these reports that keep coming out, things just aren't adding up. This is a recent report by the UN, which states, which projects that food production will fall by 25% by 2050. And that's basically looking at the environmental degradation of the land resource and the soil resource, things in terms of climate change pressures, water stress, invasive pests, and land degradation. So this is really a very complicated problem as we look at what we're faced with in terms of just providing food. When I start reading these reports and see how they don't quite add up, I think of Niels Bohr's quote, "We are all agreed that your theory is crazy. The question that divides us is whether it is crazy enough to have a chance of being correct." You can just think about that as we go forward. Again, this idea of land demands, this is just looking at arable lands per capita, and you can see this significant decrease, again projected by 2050 to be only a little over a tenth of a hectare per capita in terms of food production. And that's remarkable. That's a remarkable reduction, and also, again, gets to this idea of the amount of intensification that will be required. And the other thing here is just looking at some resources that are available throughout the world, and you can see in the U.S., you know, we have a little bit of flexibility in terms of some of our land uses, far less in China and India, where obviously the large population centers are. That is to say that they have a very fixed arable land. I think the statistic, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is China has roughly 21% of the population and only 7% of the globe's arable land. And by the way, only 7% of the globe's freshwater resource. So there will be some pressures here, of course, as well. The changing food consumption patterns is something else that's quite challenging to these to that triad of land use and management, which puts pressures on the soil resource. Obviously, meat consumption has been increasing, although in developing countries it's pretty much leveled off. But we can see in developing countries it's still increasing quite rapidly, and China being one of a major involved in a major way in that increase. But you can see that the per capita consumption in China is still quite low relative to many developed countries. And so, again, as we develop and become more wealthy, there's significant pressures that will be put on to bear on the soil resource as a result of these changing food patterns. And there's these collateral environmental issues with regards to nutrient, water use, grass, greenhouse gas emissions, and also water. Well, I said water, but this just gives you an idea of, and many of you, of course, are aware of these kinds of numbers, but a grain, the amount of water that it takes versus meat is quite significantly different. And then nutrient balances. This is a recent paper in Science. You may have seen it. Again, just looking at nutrient balances throughout the world, places like Kenya, where obviously food shortages are significant, we see that there's a tremendous degradation of soil quality due to nutrient depletion, whereas in northern China, we see significant amounts of nitrogen actually being utilized to produce crops. And in fact, I think there were some estimates that this was well over 50% more nitrogen than was required to see any difference in response. And in the U.S., we've been in the plus side for some time, and of course, this has caused collateral issues as well. The idea of biofuels getting into the mix is a very complicated question, as you know, sociologically and politically, as well as economically. But I think we have another big constraint, as I mentioned earlier, about things not adding up. These are numbers from Ratan Lal, who's done some estimates in terms of how much cropland would it really take to meet these 10 to 20% goals for substituting biofuel-derived transportation fuels versus the traditional sources. And his calculations are 43% of the cropland in the U.S. would have to be dedicated to this, and 38% in the EU. And in my mind, that just means this is a dream, at least using cropland to produce biofuels. And so I won't go into the rest of this. This is another interesting factor there. But I think this is something that we really need to think very hard about, because we still hear a lot about what the biofuel revolution here in the United States is going, where it's going to take us in terms of making these goals. Soil erosion, of course, is a huge problem. I'd like to start down here. There were a couple of years ago, and since that time, there's been a number of articles such as this that has focused soil erosion as a bigger problem as global warming. And this continues to come up, although it doesn't capture the attention of the public as much. I think it definitely is true. And there's some things here that are really quite remarkable. Global land area affected by soil erosion, approximately 1,650 million hectares. And you can see the economic issues related to that as well on an annual basis. It's quite significant. A very recently published study in China by the Bioenvironment Security Research team suggested that 3.3 million hectares of farmland is lost in the past 50 years. By 2000, estimated economic loss was $58 billion. That's very, very high. And also that construction projects completed over the next 4 years will also degrade a significant amount of land. So soil erosion is a huge problem in the United States, as well as China, as well as India. And in the United States, we're eroding soil at about 10 times roughly soil formation, rates of formation. In China, it's about 40, according to this report. In India, the best data that I could find was about 30. So we have some really huge issues with regards to actually the loss of the soil resource. What about other competing demands for the soil resource? We've got solid waste disposal in the United States. About 500 million tons of coal combustion residues are generated and deposited. You may know there was a significant breach last year in Tennessee, which was a catastrophic event. We can see in the United States biosolid production and applications to land. Again, another. In some cases, this can be used as along with agriculture, and in other areas, it has to be landfilled. And then we have solid waste. And in China has significant issues as well. One is the emerging electronic waste issue, where a lot of import of electronic waste versus that is domestically produced. And again, that's a global problem. because most of that, of course, is coming from the United States and other developed countries. Water, we know, is a problem, both quantity and quality. And again, we can kind of look at the per capita water use. And in recent years, obviously, these drought conditions in many parts of the world have caused very significant stresses on the soil resource. And again, just wanted to, I mean, I'm sure you're pretty well aware of some of the water use patterns throughout the world. And again, just showing Asia is quite significant, as well as North America. And in recent years, and the reason, of course, the soil resource is important here is that land application of water, about 70% of the world's water resource is used in agriculture. And so that's very significant. And as we look forward again, as I mentioned before, these numbers that don't seem to add up, producing the amount of food that we're going to need to produce by 2050 with what we believe is going to be a decreasing water supply and very huge challenges to the water security issues globally are going to be compounded. And of course, you know, there's been some horrendous drought cycles, both in China and the United States. Here's some pictures of China, but here's the United States. This is the southeast part of the United States. Who would have ever thought that the southeastern part of the United States, which receives about 52 inches of rain a year, would ever have photographs that would look like this? And, you know, part of this is, again, that urbanization and loss of the soil resource. There's a recent paper in Science that talked about the water issues in the Southwest, which are very, very severe, and they're projected to be quite severe through for the next century at least. But they just published a new paper on the Southeast, and it suggests that the drought cycle that we went through here recently is not a temporary drought cycle, that this will become the norm over time, and that water resources in the Southeast are going to become significantly limited. And again, looking at the soil resource, I'm sure many of you are aware that if you look at a hydrograph of a non-urbanized area, so this would be pre-urbanization, you get a nice steady increase in the hydrograph, it peaks out, and you get a nice steady decrease. What's happening there, of course, the soil is being recharged. In urban areas, and some people argue that you only need 15 to 25% of the urban area actually paved over, you get these a much different hydrograph. So the water moves through very quickly. Sometimes you get episodic floods, and then also you get much less recharge of the soil. And of course, Africa has huge water problems that we're going to be dealing with as well, very much play into the food security issue worldwide. And then nutrients and pesticides and sediment loads. Obviously, in the U.S., we have these major problems, which again go back to the land use issue as well as the degradation of the soil resource. And we have these issues in China as well as in other places in the world. I know I'm getting here close to the end. So, waste management, I already kind of talked about this, but we have significant challenges with regards to metals and metalloids, organic contaminants, as well as these emerging contaminants like pharmaceuticals and endocrine disruptors. These are very significant issues to deal with. As I mentioned, the e-waste in China. So just to conclude, the global soil resource is under intense pressure arising from population growth and increased standards of living, which also is having huge implications in terms of land use distributions. Sustaining and restoring the soil resource in the midst of intensification pressure, as well as anthropogenically induced changes in climatic conditions, is a challenge that will have to be met if we're to sustain life on the planet. And that's quite a tall challenge. And the question then that I leave you with is, can the indiscriminate abuse of the soil global resource be reversed? And I believe that it can, but only through aggressive action by the international community of soil scientists. The Soil Science Society of America, of course, our overall goal is to advance soils as fundamental to life. And we really need all of your help and the help of other soil scientists throughout the world. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
questions. We have time for probably just the one question.
Well, Bob, I want to hear your view about the future of the biofuel. Is it going to be
here? The future of biofuels?
Well,
you know, I'm still formulating my view on this, but so I was quoting Ratan Lal, and you know, Ratan gives a lot of thought to issues that he works on, and he's given a lot of thought to this biofuels issue. And if you look at his calculations, and I think they're based on reasonable assumptions, to believe that to meet a 20% target, his is 10%, and so I move it to 20 to. Just to be a little bit conservative in terms of some of the assumptions that he makes. But 20% is a goal. You know, it was 20 by 2020. That is to replace 20% of our transportation fuels by biofuel feedstock. It would require 48% of our existing arable cropland in the United States. That's just not going to happen. It can't happen. And 30-something percent in the EU. So I would say I'm not nearly as optimistic as some about proliferation of biofuel feedstock production, at least through agricultural practices. Ratan also argues, and he's done calculations, that you know, this idea of moving to marginal lands, which is also suggested, is just not feasible either. Algae, perhaps, algae production and harvesting. And I'm not ruling out that there can't be other management systems that emerge, and I'm sure that they will. I'm just saying that some of these goals that have been set are unrealistic.
Okay, it looks like we have one more quick question. Please come.
Thank you. You yourself just showed a slide of the paraphrase soils in Brazil. In the whole biofuel debate, you've got to consider waste biomass being used in different ways and not using primary biomass for biofuels, but looking toward biochar-based systems that are similar to the paraphrase.
That's correct, and that's an excellent application, but it can't meet 20% of the transportation fuels. But it will be an important in the mix, particularly for fueling small rural communities, and also then help potentially in soil carbon sequestration. So that's a good point. I just don't think that could be used to meet these goals that we've established.
Well, very good. Thank you. Thanks so much for
Thank you.
Very important.